I received a letter here over the weekend and thought it was rather interesting that the question was on the calendar. So I want you to turn with me to the book of Exodus chapter 12. Chapter 12 is rather an interesting part because here we're given the first feast day, actually, following the day of Passover. But I want you to take a look at this first verse, chapter 12 of Exodus. And Yahweh spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year unto you. Now, this doesn't really tell us a lot, except that when we continue reading, we read other relationships that this verse has with the context of what's going on. And you'll notice he says that this month, and it could just as well be this new moon that we're looking at now, Moses, this new moon that you're looking at is the beginning of the year. And we find, of course, that Yahweh's time begins in the springtime. And we continue reading. In fact, it's rather interesting that the time of the year, you have to back up to chapter 9. And we get this, and we get it in context. Chapter 9 of this book of Exodus, in verse 31, says, And the flax and barley were smitten, for the barley was in the ear, and the flax was bold. But the wheat and the rye actually were not smitten, for they were not grown up. So this is spring of the year. The winter crops have come to fruition. And the barley was the first fruit. And the point I'm trying to make here is that all of Yahweh's calendar is based on the growing cycle in the northern hemisphere. And I hope when we get done, you'll understand a little more of what we're doing here. For an example, some people think that we ought to go by some other calendar, maybe the vernal equinox and the other signs of the zodiac. But I don't understand that at all. I want to get into this a little bit here. The word first fruits appears 32 times in the New Testament. So why is Yahweh talking about first fruits, about growing crops, about fruit, about harvesting, if we're not to be a little more alert to what he has in the Old Testament? In the Exodus, as long as we're there, notice in chapter 23. Excuse me, Matt. Excuse me, Exodus 23, and in verse 16, it talks about the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labors which you have sown in the field, the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year when you have gathered things out of the field. So Yahweh's talking here about the beginning and about the end. And he ends with the first fruits, he ends and starts out with the labors and first fruits and so on. To back this up, I want you to turn over to the New Testament, the book of Romans. I'm going to instill in our mind the heart of the calendar is really in first fruits. It's on growing crops and so on. Let's go to Romans chapter 16. And here we have Paul writing to the people at Rome, probably a metropolitan city. And as Paul writes to them, he goes back to the basic growth of fruits and vegetables, cereal crops, and so on. So in chapter 16, just notice in verse 5, Likewise, greet the assembly that is in their house. Salute my well-beloved Epaphras, who is the first fruits of Achaia unto Messiah. Here he refers to it as first fruits, the first convert. And in 1 Corinthians 15, notice over in verse 20. In 1 Corinthians, Paul mentions this again. But this time he refers to someone quite important. 1 Corinthians 15, which is the resurrection chapter. And notice here that Paul writes to the people at Corinth, and in this 15th chapter, notice verse 20. Now is Messiah risen from the dead and become the first fruits of them that slept. Now, why is he talking about first fruits from the dead? The basic idea, you see, is that first fruits goes back again to the harvest. James 1:18, you don't have to turn there, but he refers to the converts of today, the believers, as a type of first fruits. The whole idea, of course, is there are first fruits which are the very best. Then come second fruits and so on. Now, the reason I wanted to go into some of these to show that the calendar that Yahweh uses is based on the harvest crops of Israel. And it doesn't depend upon the vernal equinox or the winter solstice or the summer solstice or the autumnal equinox. Now, let's go over to the book of Zechariah. Elder Bob mentioned it. And here in that 14th chapter, I want to point out something else that's interesting. Not only are we going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, but also in Zechariah chapter 14, notice in verse 1 it talks about the return of Yahshua. And it says, it's coming, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of you. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off. Then Yahshua, actually it should be, will go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. But verse 4 tells us that his feet will stand that day upon the Mount of Olives. That tells us when Yahshua comes back, he's going back to the land of Israel. Now that is, to us, is quite important, because when Yahshua comes back, he probably will go back to the land of Israel when he returns. And when he does that, we wonder what time of the year it's going to be. For your information, when we began studying this back in 1970, 75, somewhere in there, one of the things that impressed most of us that were studying it at that time was the fact that whenever the nation of Israel became a nation back in 1948, May 14th, since that time we watched on the calendar. And whenever the Jewish calendar said that there would be green ears in Israel, we checked it out, and there were green ears in Israel available. When the spring was slow, a lot of rain, cold rain, snow, the crops were delayed a month. But it seemed that Yahweh honored the Jewish calendar. And that was amazing. However, we felt also that the postponements that the Jews have added really is something of their own making. We do not believe that he will come back on those days that they have set up on their own. But we do believe that he will come back in the month that they say is that month, the month of green ears and so on. In fact, for a number of years, I used to get the Jerusalem paper, the Jerusalem News. And there was a man in there, but I've forgotten his name. He was a rabbi, but he was also a minister of agriculture. And I was especially interested beginning in February, March, and April to see what he said about his weekly report on the crops in Israel. And I watched it very closely because he would tell about the grain was filling out, the barley was in the milk stage, whatever it was. And it was interesting. But again, we noticed that it seemed that Yahweh was honoring the Jewish calendar. And I want to state that we don't necessarily believe that the Jewish dates are going to be right. But I don't think Yahweh would have his son come back on an off month and be off a whole month. He might be off a day or two compared to what the Jews say he should come back on, but he'll come back on his schedule. So I do think that we should be in harmony with the Jewish calendar, which we have been. As a matter of fact, some of you probably are aware of the fact that Elder Jacob Meyer, every year, at the time there should be green ears in Israel, goes over to Israel and physically goes out and cuts a sheaf of green ears and brings it back to Pennsylvania. And we've continued to more or less follow that so that usually we can tell when it's supposed to be, and we've had no problems so far as he's done this all through the years. Every year he's gotten a sheaf of green ears. So I'm a little skeptical of the people that have their own calendar. What they actually do, you probably are aware of this, that the astrologers and the astronomers kind of grew together. The astronomers are the ones that charted the stars and the paths that they're all taking, and they draw it all out, and they do a good job. Now, the astrologers happen to be those that took advantage of their position. And people would come to them, and they would maybe ask a question like, when is going to be a warm enough day that I could go ahead and turn my cattle out on the lowlands instead of feeding them in the barn all the time? And they'd look on their calendar, and they would probably say, well, usually about the time of the vernal equinox, you can do that. Well, that's interesting, and that's how long they tell them all, and they feel they had really had some inside news. But little by little, they began to ask other questions, like, my son is getting married sometime next month. Is that going to be a good time? And they would say, no, April's a rainy season. You really ought to wait until May. It's bright and clear and sunny. And, oh, well. And he would add something like, I'm sure you'll have a good marriage then if he waits until May. Mayflowers and all this kind of thing. Well, my point is that the astrologers took advantage of the astronomers and came up with a lot of other things. And the signs of the zodiac were another addition. And it's a big headache, really. But the interesting point is that the signs of the zodiac do not necessarily follow in new moons. They're just what they have done. They've taken 360 days in the year. And they have actually nine 90 days for each season, spring, fall, summer, and winter. So you have 90 days, you have four seasons, four times 90 is 360. So they have 5 days left over out of 65-day year. Well, different places, different times have tried different things, but the ones that go by the vernal equinox and so on contend that the winter lasts until March 21st. That's when the vernal equinox usually takes place. Sometimes it's the 19th, sometimes the 20th. But they say that if we look for a new moon that occurs before the vernal equinox and honor that new moon as the beginning of the new year or the beginning of the time to keep Passover, we're actually setting it up in winter because it's not spring yet. Spring has to come on the 21st. And we do it on the 19th or 20th. We're actually honoring a winter season. So they take something man has made and try to fit Yahweh's work into it. So they have to change what Yahweh said and make it fit their own way of looking at it. Well, it's really quite a difficult thing to try to convince people that the vernal equinox is something that most pagans still use. In fact, there's a church that says that Easter, which is a pagan holiday, isn't it? Astarte. And that is to be kept the first Sunday following the first full moon following the vernal equinox. Now, why bring in the vernal equinox into Yahweh's program when he hasn't even mentioned it? But they've forced it in there. And so we have the horoscope, where everybody, you know, grabs the paper, and it's one of the first things they look at is their horoscope to see how some star somewhere can affect their life. And, well, it's kind of ridiculous. Anyway, I'm going to have to write this thing up, but I just wanted to share some of these things with you, because people have usually asked, when do you know when to start the spring day of worship? When is the first day of the first month of green ears? Well, generally, it's around the time of the vernal equinox, but it may not be right on the vernal equinox. It may not always be after the vernal equinox. But we'd rather be in line with what the Jews have been doing, following their calendar, and make sure that they have it following the first, following the new moon that's there to start off the month. I want you to, I had another thought. Oh, I might just mention the vernal equinox, of course, comes in the spring, and it means the vernal equinox means that the days and the nights are equal, 12 hours of each. And you have the autumnal equinox, and that comes in September, and that's 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of darkness. You have a problem, though, when you look that up in the almanac, because of the precession or the bending of the light when it comes through the atmosphere, and the days and nights will not be exactly equal. They'll be fairly close, within 2 or 3 days. But it does make a difference if you're trying to go by the vernal equinox alone and think that's going to make an equal night and day. It doesn't necessarily work out that way. I want you to turn to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2. And we'll read from verse 1. It's talking about the end of the age. We read there, "The word of Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw this concerning Judah and Jerusalem. It shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established on top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it." Actually, this is talking about the spiritual Jerusalem, and it's talking about the nations that will, physical nations that will be coming to learn more about Yahweh. Notice in verse 3, "Many people shall go and say, 'Come you, let us go to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem.'" I think over the time we spent at the feast, we've come to understand that the word Zion actually is talking about the New Jerusalem, that spiritual Jerusalem, not the physical. But the spiritual Jerusalem will rule over the physical Jerusalem. And the spiritual Jerusalem is called that great city. And it's called the Bride of Messiah. It's called the saints. It's called us if we're faithful. That is the Zion it's talking about. The reason I have to bring this up is because some people say that we should not keep the feast days if they are not held first at Jerusalem. You know that the vernal equinox, got that in my mind, the time that the sun and the moon are just right, when the moon passes in its orbit around the Earth, and it comes directly between the sun and the Earth, and then it'll move away. As it moves away, it's called the molad, or conjunction. And the people say, well, you really have to have the conjunction such that the moon will be visible within about 20 hours really today. 12 hours is the closest they've ever found it. That happened just once. But after the conjunction, about 20 hours have to pass before you can see it. Which means that if the conjunction takes place and the new moon over Jerusalem is 6 hours old, you're not going to see it over there. But when it comes around to the United States, you add 7 hours more to that, and so that it will still not be seen here. But supposing you have a 13-hour new moon or conjunction over in Israel, and it couldn't be seen. It was too young. 13 hours old wasn't old enough. So by the time it gets to the United States, we would then have 20 hours old, 7 more hours added to it. So Baltimore and New York City could probably see it. If they couldn't, by the time it got to the West Coast, you'd add another a couple hours to it. It'd be 25 hours old by the time it got to Arizona, New Mexico, California, they would probably see it. Well, the old way of doing it was like this. If our sightings and the new are on the east, you couldn't see the new moon, but you come to the Mississippi River, and then on the other side of the river, they start seeing the new moon. Those that saw the new moon there would be told not to count that one, because we'd wait until the moon came around again and that the people in the east saw it, and then we could count what we saw the night before as being the new moon. Well, that kind of bothered a lot of us. We had this meeting, we discussed it and turned everything around. So the decision was made, and we still do it. And that is, if anyone in the continental United States sees the new moon, we will declare it for the entire United States. That way there's no confusion. If you either saw it or you didn't. If you didn't see it, then you don't have to worry about seeing it, except that someone else may have seen it in this continental United States. And from this has grown some of the websites. And I think that we have a number of websites you can check out and see whether or not the new moon is visible. Rich Lobert has done an extremely good job in doing this. And as soon as the new moon should be sighted, he starts working on this. And anybody who calls in, he puts it up on his chart. And you can tell who saw the new moon, when they saw it, and the exact time, the number of people that saw it, and so on. And there are others that are doing it, too. I think there was one more I was trying to think of. But anyway, the problem is that if somebody saw it and uses the binoculars or some kind of glass telescope or something, That is not really counting, because we have to think what ancient Israel had to put up with. David out there keeping his father's sheep and so on. He didn't have anything but his eyesight. But we do think reading glasses and things like that are acceptable, because we use them all the time just to find our way around. But we do not count a sighting with a telescope or binoculars. But it helps to spot where it is. And once you know where it is, a broad expanse of sky, you can zero in on some marks and see it that way. Anyway, the concept now is, what do we do if the new moon was not seen in Jerusalem and we see it here? Should we then wait until the next day and see it again when Jerusalem gets to see it? Or should we count it when we see it? Over a period of some years now, we've been counting it whenever anyone sees it. At that place and at that moment, the new moon starts. The new moon day starts. And it'll go all around the earth. Well, some of the people read the verse we just read here in Isaiah, and they say the law is going forth out of Jerusalem, and we ought to honor it by keeping the law only when it comes from Jerusalem. And if the sighting of the new moon didn't come from Jerusalem, and it couldn't be seen there, then we shouldn't count it. Well, that didn't seem right. And there are a number of reasons why we don't do it that way, although some people still do it. For example, if the new moon is not sighted, goes around another day, that means they would be keeping the feast days a day later, especially Passover and probably trumpets as well. But the point is that the new moon is to be seen in the early spring. And the reason it's a problem, you'll find there are some people that are keeping all the feast days a whole month later because they contend the new moon that was seen early this year was seen during the winter. So you have to wait until the next new moon, 30 days later, to count that as the beginning of the new moon for the year. Now, if you're all confused, I apologize. It's kind of a thing here to go through and try to keep everything balanced. But I want to point out why we don't necessarily believe that we should follow the new moon that appears in Jerusalem first. We feel whenever it appears to you, just like Yahweh brings a sunset to you and you begin the day, when you see the sun setting, that starts the day wherever you are. When you see the new moon, wherever you are, that starts the new month. So what do you do about Jerusalem? Well, our concept is that Yahshua wanted to teach us something. So go to the book of John, chapter 4. John chapter 4, Yahshua is talking to the Samaritan woman, the Syrophoenician woman. And he actually says to her a number of things that I believe you ought to be aware of. Move down to verse 17. Yahshua just said, go call your husband. We're in John 4 and verse 17. And the woman said, I have no husband. Yahshua said unto her, you have well said you have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thine husband. In this you said truly. And the woman said, Sir, I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this in this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where we want to worship. Now notice what Yahshua says. Woman, believe me, the hour comes when you shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship you know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. Verse 23, but the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeks such to worship him. Yahweh is spirit, or Yahweh is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Excuse me. What Yahshua is saying, we're not going to pay attention to Jerusalem anymore. And to prove that, what he was telling her, in less than 40 years, that temple's going to be destroyed. The Levitical priesthood will be done away. We have no more Levitical priesthood. And he also, in fact, if you been interested in the Ark of the Covenant, no one knows where it is. And yet that used to be a thing of adoration. In fact, some of the rabbis contend that the high priest went in and talked to the Ark of the Covenant. Got his answers from there. Today you can't find it. Oh, it's mentioned in the book of Revelation. You can see it in the heavens. But my point is that the Melchizedek priesthood has superseded the Levitical. And we do away with some of the things that people think are really important. One of them is the circumcision has been set aside. It's not required. Paul said that over and over, 1 Corinthians 7:14 and 22 and 20. He talked about it. And the Jews thought that everyone who became a convert of Yahshua first had to get his background in Judaism and be a Jew, and then he could convert to become a follower of Messiah. And Paul said, no, you don't have to do that. You can come directly from paganism into following Yahshua when you're baptized into Yahshua, because in so doing you're given Yahweh's Spirit. Well, anyway, there are some other things you want to look at. Turn to the homes in the book of John, chapter 14. See, Yahshua's idea was to teach his people, and because of Pentecost, the Spirit has come to this earth to stay. And before that, the Spirit was given and it was taken away. It was given to people like Samson because he was a carnal man. It was taken away. And even now, we're not given the fullness of the Spirit. We're given the earnest, as it says in Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 3:7. Anyway, we're given the down payment to see what we will do with it. Allow it to dominate our lives, our thinking, and our thought processes and our goals. But notice here in chapter 14 of John, I want to skip down verse 26. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, which he did on Pentecost, didn't he? Excuse me. This Spirit shall teach you all things and bring all things to your remembrance, whatever I have said unto you. So we find here that the Holy Spirit is the thing that's going to remind us, keep us in mind of Yahshua and Yahweh and what Yahshua has said in his word. Let's go to chapter 16. And here, as you probably know, chapters 14, 15, 16, 17 are all what Yahshua spoke to his disciples as he was going to Calvary, as he was going to be impaled. And these were the last-minute instructions he gave to his disciples. So here in the 16th chapter, we'll notice what he says here in verse 13. Again, well, verse 12, he says, I have many things to tell you, but you cannot bear them now. Albeit when the Spirit of truth has come, this Spirit will guide you into all truth. This Spirit will not speak of himself, but whatever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he shall show you things to come. So we're supposed to get an even bigger, a bigger and better understanding of what Yahshua is doing as we study his word. And I think those of us who've been to the Feast of Tabernacles know that the elders tried their best to tell us to expand our thinking. Don't be zero in on one little thing. But know that the Bible is a comprehensive book. Not only does it talk about the physical, but there's also a reference many, many times to the spiritual. And that's what we want to understand. Understand some of those deeper things. Okay, let's... I want to go over to the book of 1 Corinthians. First Corinthians chapter 3. Most people know what John 3:16 says. We'll take a look at 1 Corinthians 3:16. And notice there, it says, "Don't you know that you are the temple of Yahweh and the Spirit of Yahweh dwells in you?" So we're to have Yahweh's Spirit indwelling us. Over in Thessalonians, Paul said that we should allow the Spirit to grow and don't quench the Spirit. If you know you should do something that is spiritual or directed by Yahweh and you keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, you're quenching the Spirit. Pretty soon that little voice won't hear it anymore. You're so busy with other things. And we're not to quench the Spirit. So notice here in this 17th verse, if any man defile the temple of Elohim, him shall Elohim destroy, for the temple of Elohim is holy, which temple you are. So we have a lot of things here that tell us that we are supposed to follow Yahweh's prompting and so on. Let's go over to chapter 6 in this 1 Corinthians. And notice there again, verse 19. "What? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of Elohim, and you are not your own? You are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify Elohim in your body and your spirit, which are Yahweh's." We find the same thing over in the 2 Corinthians 6:16. "What agreement has the temple of Yahweh with idols? For you are the temple, and you're of the living Yahweh." And we go on to read that, and it says, "I will dwell in these temples, I will walk in them, I will be their Yahweh, and they shall be my people." So the point is, if I understand this right, Yahshua is saying, we don't have to wait to go to Jerusalem to find out what Jerusalem is doing. Yahweh can work with us anywhere. Paul even prayed down by the river, didn't he? By the waters. And he met with people and taught with them. So we don't necessarily have to meet in Jerusalem, is my point. And we know that Yahweh's Spirit can certainly work with us and help us to do these things. But the thing we want to be sure and remember is this, that even though there are some things that the Old Testament we don't do anymore, we should understand what they stood for, what they meant, why they were given. Because if we're going to be a king and a priest in the kingdom, the people that will be guiding and helping will be keeping a lot of these Old Testament laws. We don't have to do them because we understand the physical is but a measure of the spiritual, which we learn from doing the physical. And we learn spiritual lessons from the physical. Well, one thing I do know, that the calendar that we try to work out is sometimes a little confusing. And I do believe that most of the people that we have been in contact with in setting up the calendar and working with it has pretty much stayed with what we had decided a number of years ago, including the fact that when the new moon comes to us, wherever we are, for us, that is the beginning of the new month. And when it moves all around the earth, next new moon may not even be close by this one. It'll be someplace else. But that's okay. When it comes to us, it'll be the new moon that we're keeping. And we're doing it because we're trying to obey Yahweh and do the things as He brings them to us, just like He brings us the sunset for the new month. Well, I pray Yahweh's Spirit will help us understand a lot more things that we are struggling with now, including a clear understanding of the calendar and so many other things. May Yahweh keep us in His care and guide us, strengthen us.